This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry.
In search of greener grass,
Microsoft and AMD chase non-HPC.
Hello and welcome to HPC Wire Soundbite for July 12th, 2013, available Fridays on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Addison Snell with Intersect 360 Research, joined again by Nicole Hemsoth, editor of HPC Wire. How's it going, Nicole?
Great, Addison. How you doing?
Doing fine, thanks. Well, you know, in a kind of a fun twist this week, you had stories on HPC Wire about two major companies that we've associated with HPC, and the theme of both articles was that they're not really focusing too much on HPC.
Right. And this certainly wasn't planned to have this kind of theme this week. I did have a scheduled conversation with Andrew Feldman from AMD. I was the head of the server group there, and that's just the natural transition that our conversation took because they weren't really at ISC. The number of systems. I have a nice little bad graphic that I did on HPC Wire that shows the Opteron share on the top 500 and where that's going. So
I thought it was a lovely graphic, Nicole. Quite illuminating. And then separate from that, there was just news out this week about Microsoft and their reorganization, and they outlined a couple of operational areas that they were focusing on, and HPC not really on the list.
No, HPC is definitely not on their list either. In fact, it seems they've broken things down into four areas, and we can go through those in a second. And really, those revolve around things like, you know, the Xbox, the phones, the Windows operating system for the masses, but at no emphasis whatsoever, at least in that list, on any sort of research and development, not even just HPC, but that kind of vibrant research culture that they've always had has been really shoved under the rug, it seems.
Right. Very consumer-oriented coming from Microsoft. AMD, of course, also looking at mobile. So we'll break down kind of both of those strategic directions and what the reasons behind them are and why, and how much we expect we'll see these companies in the future in HPC. Why don't we start with the AMD one? That's a direct conversation you said you were having with Andrew Feldman. Where did you get a sense HPC fits into their roadmap right now?
Well, he was very aggressive about defending the value and potential use cases for their APU. And, you know, there was a little bit of trash talking against Intel. You can read that in the article saying that, you know, they developed a lot of technology ahead of Intel, but maybe just didn't do the best job of marketing it. Now, where he says the real value of the APU isn't in HPC proper. So maybe not in the top 500, but a hot market for AMD right now is in government. So all of these applications, and he rattled off a number of them where, you know, these large-scale facial recognition applications, government is a hot area. And he said some of it's HPC. There are some MPI-type models being used in some of these applications, but it's high-end computing, high-volume computing, and that's where they want to focus.
Yeah, I get a little frustrated sometimes by companies saying, well, we're not doing real HPC, we're just doing some of these other areas. And then they proceed to describe some high-volume HPC areas, you know, that are engineering or science applications. They're like, oh, we don't do HPC, but we do pharmaceuticals or something crazy like that. HPC is a much bigger market than the top 500 list, and you can participate in HPC without really doing much in top 500, if you ask me.
Yeah. I don't know that he was really disagreeing with that so much, but I think that the fear is using the word HPC and sort of scaring people off. And we've had articles over the last year where vendors on both hardware and software side have said, yeah, we're really focusing on big data. And I said, well, so is that kind of like the Hadoop, like MapReduce type applications? Well, it's just not HPC. And they're trying to broaden the scope by pulling in these larger movements. It's kind of scary to associate oneself with HPC because presumably there's no growth, but you and I both know that that's really not the case. There is a decent growth and good solid numbers behind HPC.
Oh, absolutely. HPC is a $29 billion market in 2012, forecast to grow at 7.4% over the next 4 years. $10 billion of that is the server component. Now, if you break it out, high-performance technical computing versus high-performance business computing, you know, that's where you get about a two-thirds, one-third split of the market, two-thirds of it being the technical computing, science and engineering side, whereas the business computing is more things like finance and media and entertainment, but still vertical markets that are well associated with HPC. Now, to the point, though, what percent of those end users think of themselves or associate themselves with the term HPC? If you went to them and said, are you an HPC user? Certainly there are some who wouldn't think of it that way, even in traditional areas like engineering. You go to a small manufacturer and say, are you an HPC company? No, not really. I mean, we've got some models where we do computer-aided engineering or computational fluid dynamics, but I wouldn't really say we're HPC. You know, where does that come from, do you think, that HPC, somehow the term only means a big academic research lab?
I'm not sure, and I'm also not sure on the other end how to go about redefining it. Like, you can say, on the one hand, we have enterprise business computing and enterprise tech. That gets equally muddled, and it also further isolates these little segments. There needs to be kind of one overarching idea. And I'll say, too, when I went to, you know, when I was covering Datanomy, I was covering the big data phenomenon, right, which a lot of the HPC people call data-intensive computing. They disassociate themselves with it, some of them.
Right.
I would go to conferences and say, well, yeah, I'm kind of taking an HPC slant. Well, what's HPC? They have no idea. Oh, okay, they'll say. Well, that's just for universities and labs. I mean, that's the common perception, and I don't know what the way around that is. And so vendors are starting to look for their own way out, and it could be through calling it big data or calling it green data center. I mean, there are all these different routes some of these vendors are taking now.
Well, coming back around to where AMD is playing, I agree with Andrew Feldman's viewpoint that the APUs are really underrepresented in the market. From a technology standpoint, we talk to end users. People like the technology, but AMD has nevertheless been, as you point out in your article, steadily losing market share over the last several years. They kind of hit their zenith in 2006, 2007, not only in the top 500 list, but in the shares of processors they were putting into the market. There was a whole year where they outshipped Intel processors into HPC when Opterons were hot and Intel was struggling with early Itaniums in that time frame, and it wasn't until late 2007 when AMD kind of had a misstep with the Barcelona processor that and Intel was simultaneously getting big into the 64-bit extensions in x86 that AMD lost its lead and has been steadily losing it ever since.
Right. And then on the other hand, too, the added competition on the graphics processor front from NVIDIA with this, you know, very highly touted discrete GPU that was capable of all these specialized applications and 10x, 20x performance leads. They got closed out. Their message just wasn't resonating for some reason, despite the fact that they really were first in line in a lot of these technology areas. Like when I was talking to Andrew Feldman about some of the developments on their Freedom Fabric, you know, and he was comparing mm-hmm. what Intel's doing and some of the acquisitions that they made, you know. He's like, this is much older technology, and the things that they are going to do with it, even the QLogic assets, are HPC specific, like the Xeon Phi's. We're targeting a much bigger market with our APU, and maybe we haven't pitched it the right way to HPC, but that's not what our plan is.
Well, and the real shame of it is that I kind of liked the essence of their story, where they would say CUDA is a proprietary path down this technology, and the Intel tools are proprietary path down that path. And the beauty of the AMD APUs was it was around open community with OpenCL. It was kind of a nice story. It just didn't get a lot of traction against the PR juggernauts of Intel and NVIDIA on either side.
No, I agree with you. On another note related to that, though, I thought it was interesting that I asked him, I said, how are you guys going to keep up with Intel? And he just laughed and he said, we've never looked at it that way. We have no interest in keeping up with Intel or chasing them. we're going to go around them. And the way that they plan on doing that, and we'll see how this plays out in this market that we follow, and then in the larger data center market, but is through this Project Seattle, the 64-bit ARM cores that they're doing some really interesting things with. They're putting the Freedom Fabric and ARM cores together, and I think things will get really interesting. I'm just not sure when a lot of this will emerge. I think the end of 2014, they're going to have some real products emerging.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right with regards to ARM. It, coincidentally, just yesterday, we did our second quarterly call with our HPC 500 user group, including a panel on some of the newer architectures and end-user experiences on GPUs and Intel Xeon Phi. And when I talked about AMD specifically, it didn't come up a lot, but when we were looking at what other architectures people were discussing in the future, I was surprised at how many of them were talking about ARM as a potential 64-bit ARM as a potential viable candidate in the future. And, you know, it might be that ARM is really the open door that gets AMD back into this game.
That is quite possible. I just wonder how long it's going to be, though, before there's an aggressive and vibrant enough ecosystem around 64-bit ARM that people are actually going to adopt. I mean, in that time, though, I think what could happen in that lag time between when ARM's sort of ready for all this to happen. So we've got Intel making some really unique developments. And on that note, Addison, what happens to NVIDIA? What happens to the discrete GPU in that equation?
Well, you know, it wasn't a high-volume survey in this case, although we've done a bunch of those as well. But in the case of this qualitative discussion around Xeon Phi and CUDA and the panel experience that we had, there was really a very strong leaning towards Xeon Phi and the promise that shows in terms of being Intel tools, more direct-to-program. A lot of Intel's message seems to be resonating there.
So these are people then that have actually used both GPUs and Xeon Phi, or are just evaluating, or they're a mix of users?
Well, there was a mix of people who've evaluated or deployed them in large scale, but the panel was made up of users with experience with multiple architectures, including Xeon Phi, GPU, and ARM.
Okay, so the experience that we've reported on, and we're always looking for different takes on this, so please email me anytime if you've got a radically different view. But Xeon Phi is much easier to port, but the optimization problems are really not that much different from NVIDIA to Intel. Like, a lot of those kinks still need to be worked out. Did you hear any of that?
Yeah, well, one comment I heard once that seems to get a lot of agreement when I repeat it is the notion that you can get started faster with Intel tools, with Intel Xeon Phi, but to do the full optimization requires about the same level of work between Phi and GPU. It's just that in order to get there is more of an incremental process with Xeon Phi, whereas the GPUs, you're going to be in a little bit more of an all-or-nothing scenario.
I see. Interesting. I look to seeing some of the results that you guys got from that panel. I'm sure that's fascinating.
It's fun working with that HPC 500 group, I'll tell you that. Good, diverse viewpoints. So, Nicole, we spent a lot of time talking about AMD. Let's come back around on Microsoft and some of the organizational announcements there.
Well, I can put it very simply for you. They broke down their business. They're trying to consolidate everything. They put it into four different buckets, none of which contain anything remotely related to research or HPC, and they are focused purely, it seems, on kind of mid-market consumer general data center database type products.
You know, it's kind of a shame and in one way embarrassing to us as analysts, because if you go back to early days with Intersect 360 Research, back when we were Tabor Research, we were the analysts who were saying Microsoft is coming and you're going to see a big share increase for Windows and HPC, and that was happening through 2008, 2009, up into 2010, and then after that, there was an organizational change where I think it was in 2011 they announced this technical computing initiative that sort of took all of HPC and moved it underneath the cloud strategy with Azure, and it's almost like that's the last we heard about it, and HPC got a lot less of a play from Windows after that.
Yeah, and even right after they made the switch over with the technical computing group over to Azure, you did hear some talk about how they were going to build out an HPC cloud infrastructure. And at that time, I was actually actively covering HPC cloud. And there was a lot of talk about it. I know that they have some InfiniBand connected machines, but it all died. It all went away. And in fact, a lot of the people that served as great contacts on the engineering and leadership side have since flown the coop. So it's a mystery. I mean, I don't know exactly what their position is. And it's odd to me also that no one will really step out and publicly, you know, talk to me, kind of like Andrew did over at AMD.
Well, I mean, the thing is, as soon as you confine HPC to cloud, it's a big limiting factor on the market. Cloud computing is a big enterprise trend, but the challenges around HPC and cloud are things that we've discussed thoroughly over the last couple of years, and we've tracked the spending on cloud and HPC at the budget level and found that it tends to be pretty flat at around 2.5% of spending in the market. And, you know, if you really break it down, that implies that there is a market for HPC in the cloud, but it's less than $1 billion right now, and it's not growing any faster than the market as a whole.
Yeah, and I'll say too, and I don't mean to throw Microsoft under the bus here. I really want them to find their place with us again. But I mean, Amazon was there first when it comes to HPC cloud offerings. They were the first to really experiment with improving the greatest problem, which is performance in the cloud. You've got a latency hit, very expensive data movement problems. And they actively worked to solve some of those. And Microsoft just kind of didn't follow up. So if there is an HPC cloud market there, I think Amazon sort of run away with it. Rackspace is doing some interesting things too. If you take a look at our sister publication, HPC in the Cloud, they're trying to reach out to an HPC audience. So there's momentum there, and you said there is potential for growth, but they don't have a solid plan to find it.
Well, you know, my bigger concern with Microsoft is I just wish they would get back onto you can do compute nodes with Microsoft Windows, regardless of whether it's a cloud thing. I mean, they got to where they were scaling it on the compute side. The data management side was still patchy, but they were making progress, because the fact is, when you look at the PC or the workstation environment or the general IT environment, the enterprise environment, a lot of that is dominated by Windows, and there's plenty of commercial IT enterprises who would prefer it if the technical computing nodes could also be on Windows. And that's where their opportunity was. It was just that Windows was a hurdle to get over on the technical application side. Cloud introduced another hurdle. They put in another organizational hurdle by, you know, calling it all Azure and cloud, and it just became too much, and the market walked back away from it.
Right, right. I'm thinking that maybe once they wrap their head around what big data means to them too, they can start reallocating money and investment into some new R&D initiatives that might benefit HPC. I don't know if they're ever going to revive Windows for, you know, top 500 type systems. I think I reported there were three Windows systems.
I don't think it has to be top 500, though. In as much as we've talked about, you know, how big the missing middle opportunity is, really, if there's any company that stands to benefit from that kind of investment, it's Windows. That's where they could pick up an awful lot of share that's not well protected by anybody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, I think that Windows could sell a lot of nodes there, but it's not going to be as cloud, not for new adopters.
No, it's far too scary on far too many levels, and I don't know if that's going to change. Cloud has a reputation just like HPC does, and sometimes it works for both of those and sometimes against.
That's exactly right. So, you know, in summary, I think there's a lot of opportunity in HPC for both AMD and Microsoft, but from a marketing or organizational standpoint, they're not really lined up to take advantage of it right now, either one of them. It would take a conscious choice for them to make a decision of how much of this market that's billions of dollars worth, that's a proximity market today, do they want to go after?
Right, right. There's such strong numbers behind HPC that you report, that other analyst organizations report. But, I mean, there's not the same startup culture for HPC. There's not the same reputation for innovation and moving beyond this kind of, sheltered community. So I just wonder what the way is forward, and if there's any way of going back and kind of convincing the greater enterprise world that this is not a segmented area.
I think you make a good point there, Nicole, that, you know, there's this startup culture of people who are chasing forecast porn of markets that have to have an 100% annual growth rate or it's not interesting. I want to be Google. I want to be Zynga. I want to be, you know, something huge and consumer-oriented like that that's going to change the world, as opposed to a boring $30 billion market that's only going to grow at 7% that's been around for decades. It just isn't as exciting to in terms of looking for that breakout opportunity. The thing is, in most of these cases, it's a lot more achievable. It's a market that's right there that for a certain amount of investment, you could really start making a movement in. And that's what I'd like to see people do, is these more realistic approaches to a proximity market that is of a size and growing.
Right, right. Or maybe we just need more forecast porn, Addison.
Chris and I will work on forecast porn. We're going to kind of revise our forecast to show that HPC is a $1 trillion market with an 80% growth rate, and I think a lot more people will buy our research.
Well, I hope we don't lose our G rating for our podcast then.
All right, thanks a lot, Nicole, and we'll work on what the rating for our podcast is for next week.
Sounds great. Thanks. Bye bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite. Got a question or comment? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.